It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Believe in ghosts?
First simply disappears, the other two died.
Hello, hello, my pretties. It's your host, Ashley Lana, your certified nightmare prescriber and your fueler of terror, the giver of nightmares and just everything that stresses you out at night. Welcome back, my fear cult. Every week, people are listening, and this is awesome because every week, more people are listening and tuning in that are new. So if you're new here, hi! And thank you to everyone who shares and reviews the episodes because it makes a large difference and it does bring more people in. So thank you. Each episode, I examine the dark psychology of the world's most horrific crimes and horror. So with that being said, welcome to Lullaby. Last episode, we discussed three cursed horror films, The Exorcist, The Omen, and Poltergeist. And that was really fun. We were able to collectively agree that deaths was the common middle ground in films that involve demons and Satan. This week, we are going to be examining a serial killer who is a maniac with zero remorse. Tonight's case is one that psychologically fascinates me, and it has for years. If there is one thing that you take from this episode, it's that not everything is what it seems. Also, there are two guest cameos in this lullaby, so listen close for them. Get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving descriptions of rape, murder, and necrophilia. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. The sun had set over the city, and streetlights lit up the busy downtown party life of Angarsk. As the night came to life and the teenagers came out to party, the officers were required to patrol the area to prevent any foolish drunkards from wandering the sidewalks. An officer had been patrolling the back streets when he came across two young women walking away from the crowds. A serial killer was currently on the loose and luring young girls and butchering their bodies. It was important to protect the brave ones who still walked the streets after dark. Pulling up to the women, the officer rolled down his window. He introduced himself and flashed his police badge, explaining that he would feel more comfortable escorting the ladies home safely. The two girls agreed and entered the police vehicle. They drove off, making small talk about the disappearances and how anyone could do such a horrific crime. The officer drove out to the Serbian wilderness and told the girls to get out of the car. He then proceeded to beat them to an inch of their lives and brutally rape them. Then, he finished them off. Once the crime was over, he got back into his vehicle and began driving back into the city. Looking down, he noticed immediately that his police badge was not pinned to his uniform. At high speed, he raced back to the crime scene and seen that one of the women was still alive. This is the true story of Mikhail Popkov, the werewolf of Angarsk. Mikhail Viktorovich Popkov was born March 7, 1964, in the Russian city of Norilsk. At the time, Russia was known worldwide as the Soviet Union. In 1969, when Mikhail was roughly 5 years old, his mother, Antonina, and his father moved to Angarsk, in southeastern Siberia. Mikhail's parents left him to reside with his grandmother, back in Norilsk. Unbeknownst to Mikhail, his parents had given birth to a daughter named Lena during the period he was away. Eventually, when Mikhail was invited to move back with his parents, the news of a baby sister upset him immensely. He felt betrayed and insignificant to his family. He believed that his family had abandoned him to bring another life into this world without his acknowledgement. Mikhail then focused his emotions to ignite his fire to impress his parents and become a better child than his sister. He resented his sister Lena for taking all of the attention away from him. As Mikhail grew up, he invested his time into his education and always produced excellent grades. He developed a strong work ethic and the ability to organize from an early age. At 8 years old, Mikhail wanted to start working, and he began helping his dad dig graves at a local cemetery. This allowed him to build a strong bond with his father, which he adored. However, according to Mikhail, while at home, he was ignored by his parents. He claims in later interviews that his alcoholic mother abused him consistently. While in school, he was never considered a troublemaker, and his main goal was to impress his family. Around 1981, when Mikhail was 17 years old, he went to a technical institute and began working as a mechanic. Feeling successful that his life was heading in the right track, he began daydreaming of the future. At this time, he met a girl, and the two began dating. Not soon after, Mikhail was drafted into the military for service. Upon hearing the news, his girlfriend informed him that she would not wait for him, so he should not remain hopeful that the two would be together once he returned. Over the course of 2 years, Mikhail dreamt about his life with his girlfriend after the war, and how he wanted to start a family of his own. Once he was demobilized from the army, he returned to the love of his life. Except, the woman he fantasized over had left him and married another man. Heartbroken and distraught, Mikhail decided that he would head back to his home where he lived with his parents. As he entered the house, he witnessed his mother engaging in sexual intercourse with another man on the couch. Mikhail noticed that his father was lying across the room, passed out. He covered the rejection from his ex-girlfriend and replaced it with the excitement of seeing his family again. But that was soon replaced with rage. Mikhail assumed that his mother had been cheating on his father with the father's friend. But little did Mikhail know that his father had just participated in the sexual threesome with his wife. Everything was mutual. Mikhail, however, was disgusted by his mother and seen her as an unfaithful disgrace. Mikhail had lost all respect for his mother, and after witnessing his mother's infidelity, he grew a hatred for women. He believed that they were not meant to be trusted. He decided that he had no interest in attempting to try a relationship in the future. Okay, so during interviews, Mikhail expressed that his hatred towards women stemmed from him witnessing his mother having sex with another man. And though his mother wasn't cheating, he didn't even humor the concept of what actually happened. A threesome. What also doesn't help the scenario was that Mikhail had just discovered that he lost the love of his life and she actually went and married another man. And even though she did tell him, look, I won't wait for you while you're in the army, and she went Beyonce on his ass and said, well, if you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it. And then he was like, this fucking sucks, I'm going home. So he actually goes and he buys his mom a nice pair of flowers, and he was really pumped for this. And he walked in on his mother doing the boot scootin' boogie in the living room while he's on this hot-headed warpath, and then the misogyny settles in and he thinks women are disgusting. So misogyny is the dislike and strong prejudice against women. And it's important to understand that misogyny is not restricted to only men. Any person can be misogynistic. This includes women. Okay? So Mikhail's misogynistic views stemmed from the age of 5, when he felt abandoned by his parents when they had a daughter without his knowledge. And then he was jealous of his sister because of the attention that he felt she stole from him. His alcoholic mother abused him, and then he seen her having sex with another man while his father was passed out. He didn't like that. And we can see his neurological mindset of distrusting women starting to brew. And as he aged, he fell in love with his first girlfriend, who he felt abandoned him when he was in the army. And since she married another man, he was like, that's it. This is strike 3. And he wants nothing to do with relationships with women because of his distrust towards them. But to his surprise, he actually finds a woman and he cools down his hatred because he falls for her, and he falls hard. As I continue, I will explain how Mikhail's hatred for women influences the cruel acts that he will subdue them to in the future. Let's continue. Years pass by, and the 22-year-old Mikhail Popkov continued to work. In 1986, he met a young girl who he felt was different from the rest. Her name was Elena Mishurova. 4 months after meeting, the two were married, and the couple had a daughter they named Ekaterina. In July 1987, Mikhail then decided to join the Soviet police force. He took his job seriously and loved every day of it. The authority, the uniform, and the respect. Everything was exactly how Mikhail had envisioned. He had a healthy child, a beautiful wife, and a successful career. In his eyes, nothing could go wrong. Until March 8th, 1992, International Women's Day in the Soviet Union. After a long day's work, 28-year-old Mikhail had gotten into his car to drive home. He wanted to celebrate with his wife and daughter. When he pulled up into the driveway, he noticed his young daughter sitting alone on the porch of their home. It was pouring rain, and he was so concerned to see his daughter alone. He exited his vehicle and asked his daughter why she wasn't inside where it was warm. Ekaterina looked at him and said, "Mommy asked me to give her and this man some time alone and to go outside." The hairs on the back of Mikhail's neck began to stand as he felt the flush of suspicion rise through his bloodstream. He trudged into the house with his 5-year-old daughter behind him. Slamming into walls, screaming, he entered the room where his wife was. She was alone. This did nothing to calm Mikhail down. He began accusing Elena of cheating on him, to which she denied. Mikhail searched the entire house and dug through the trash cans. This is where he found 2 used condoms. Not wanting to ruin his family's perfect image, he let it go. Except now, the jealousy of his sister, the abuse and suspected adultery of his own mother, and now the possible infidelity of his own wife, the one who he believed was different from the rest, was now the battery of his own raging hatred towards women that he had to take out. Mikhail Popkov wanted to brutally murder his wife. He had vivid imaginations of all the tortures he would put her body through before he killed her. But he couldn't kill his wife. Of course not. That would ruin everything. Instead, he manifested his murderous justification with punishing the immoral women of the city, earning him the title, the werewolf, the Angars maniac. Mikhail would target what he referred to as loose women that reminded him of his wife and mother, that he deemed morally unfit. He would drive by the nightclubs in his police car and see women drinking and having a good time. He explained that this angered him. He visualized all of them as running away from their families to have sex and party without their husbands. One night in 1992, Mikhail was in his police uniform, driving in his squad car. He seen an intoxicated woman stumbling down the street. Pulling over, he asked her if she needed a ride. The woman seen his badge and felt comfortable knowing that he was a police officer and got into his vehicle. According to Mikhail, soon after the woman entered his vehicle, she began physically attacking him. He explained in later interviews that he hit her back by accident and knocked her out. He claims to have panicked, and he was at a crossroads about what to do. The young woman would identify him if he let her go. He made the decision to let his anger take control. Using his police baton, he brutally beat her body. He then drove miles away from the city to dispose of her body in the forest. Pulling her body from the car, she began moaning awake. Mikhail took a knife and began stabbing her body. He stripped her naked and left her corpse in the forest. He then returned home to his wife and daughter. The excitement beamed inside of him. He felt that he had done society a good deed, saying, quote, "cleaning the city from fallen women." Time had passed and no one had found the body of the murdered young woman. He felt invincible because of his badge. People would have never expected a police officer with a wife and child to be such a monster. It was perfect. He could live a double life and execute depraved murderous acts and still be viewed as a model citizen. Late at night, Mikhail suited up in his police uniform and he would patrol the dark streets of the downtown nightlife. Cruising past the young adults just enjoying the clubs, his eyes would fall upon women who were without men. He would pull up next to them and offer them rides. or he would ask if they would like to go party elsewhere and engage in sex. If they declined any sexual advances, drug offers, or alcohol, he would drive them home safely. But if they accepted, his anger was triggered. McHale expressed in interviews after his sentencing, saying, quote, "I had a desire to teach and punish them. The victims were those who at night, without being accompanied by men and without a specific goal, drunk, were on the streets, behaved frivolously, carelessly, were not afraid to engage in conversation with me, get into the car, and then ride in search of adventure. I had the desire to teach and punish them." When a woman accepted his advancements, he would drive them deep into the Serbian wilderness and began his attacks. They would engage in sexual intercourse, which more often than not was rape. And McHale always kept a pack of condoms in his glove compartment. If a woman didn't want to have sex with him after arriving, he would brutally rape her and torture her. No matter the outcome, once in the wilderness, the woman's fate was sealed. After sex, McHale would violently beat his victims with a baton or an axe. He would then stab their bodies so many times that the count was between 145 and 170 times. The weapons used were usually left at the crime scene on purpose, and McHale would clean all of his DNA and fingerprints off of the weapons, a tactic he learned from the police training on crime scenes. The rage that flooded McHale allowed him to perform disgusting acts to the corpses. After he killed the women, he would have sex with their bloody bodies. One victim was completely decapitated, and another had her heart ripped from her body. Some of the women who he had killed had bite marks all over their bodies, which earned McHale the nickname the Werewolf. The women that he murdered resembled his mother and his wife in appearance, with the ages ranging from 40 years old to as young as 16. Close to 6 years had gone by, and Mikhail Popkov had gone completely under the radar. He was killing multiple women a month and was even the responding officer to many of the crime scenes. Mikhail would observe what the investigators were searching for and made mental notes of his next attacks. The number of murdered women skyrocketed and caught the attention of the entire city of Angarsk. Women were terrified of meeting strangers, so whenever Mikhail stopped to speak to a woman, he informed them that the ride home with a police officer was the safest option, which worked every time. One night, Mikhail was driving around and he decided to do something he had not yet attempted before. He saw two women, 37-year-old Lilia Pashkovskaya and 35-year-old Marina Lishina. He drove them both to the Siberian wilderness and brutally beat them to death and raped their bodies. He removed the evidence from the crime scene, cleaned his police vehicle, and drove back into the city. As he was replaying the murder in his head, he was pleased with himself. Realization then set in. He felt his stomach drop instantly. His police badge was not on his uniform. Whipping his car around, he sped back to the scene. Using a combination of the headlights and his flashlight, he scoped the area. Then, he caught the silver glimmering of his badge. Bending down to pick it up, he glanced over and seen that one of the females was still breathing. Taking a weapon of his choice, he proceeded to beat her until all vital signs were lost. Are you guys ready for this? Because I'm going in. So, since his childhood, McHale learned how to be organized, and he utilized his intelligence to become, I hate saying this, but one of the world's most successful serial killers. So his motive was his misogyny to women due to his past experiences, and his final spark to start killing was his suspected convictions towards his wife's adultery. And then he murdered his first victim while imagining it was his wife that he was harming. When he left the scene, he felt this heightened sense of power and accomplishment that even though he didn't kill his wife, he believed that he rid the world of a woman who could hurt someone else. So this jumpstarts Mikhail's self-proclaimed purpose in life as an organized, mission-orientated, hedonistic serial killer. And now, I don't know about you, but I just got goosebumps down my entire body because if you don't know, that is the most dangerous form of serial killers, especially when they are as intelligent as Mikhail Popkov, because they are harder to catch. And there are two specific subcategories of serial killers. We've discussed this before. There are disorganized serial killers and the organized serial killer. Disorganized serial killers are usually opportunists, and the victims are people in the wrong place at the wrong time, and nothing is planned, and these people usually have low IQs and take zero steps to prevent hiding their crimes. And now Mikhail Popkov was highly intelligent and planned his locations and chose his victims. He used the ploy of being a protector to gain the trust of women. Now, although he never tried to hide the bodies, he did take the time to remove all evidence tying him to the crimes, which worked. And okay, I'm getting very excited because this is the good stuff. Now, here's the criminal profiling that just fascinates me. So, based on historical crime scene patterns, the fact that Mikhail left the weapons and removed all evidence tying him not only him, but anyone else to the crime scene, investigators would know that the murderer is intelligent and is aware of police investigation methods. Organized killers, they tend to lead normal lives on the outside. They have good careers, a family, they're educated and socially manipulative and controlled. And deep down, organized killers have, wait for it, our favorite term here at the Fear Cult. I hope you can all know it by now, and if not, take mental notes when I say it. Antisocial personality disorder. And often a psychopath that lacks all remorse for their crimes. Now, a serial killer can be a mix of both organized and disorganized. It's sloppy, and what it could suggest is that a killer is psychologically changing their motives or their lives are starting to spiral. It's kind of like when you're doing an exam and then the teacher says, okay, class, you have 5 minutes. And so you realize you have 30 questions left. So you just start marking C. So it goes from calm and organized to hectic and chaotic. And you usually fail. Anyways, Mikhail Popkov is a cruel, disgusting human being. And his numbers at this point are higher than 25. But he's nowhere near done. On the cold night of January 26, 1998, 17-year-old Svetlana Misievich was returning home from a friend's house. Curling her body towards her chest, she kept her head down to block the cool breeze.
I can't believe how cold it is right now.
In her peripheral, she noticed a vehicle pull up next to her. The officer inside rolled down the window and leant towards the passenger seat. He appeared concerned for the young girl's well-being and offered her a ride home. Svetlana then thought to herself,
"He is a police officer, and I'm cold from my head to my toes."
"There's been murders out here lately, and as an officer, I'd feel better knowing you made it home safe."
"Yeah, I'd really appreciate a ride. Thank you so, so much."
The man gave her a warm smile and led her inside of the car. As Mikhail began driving her towards her home, she noticed that he had passed her house entirely. She turned to him confused.
"Where are we going? We already passed my house."
"Don't worry."
"Where are we going?"
Sitting back in the seat, still on high alert, she prayed that everything was going to be all right. He was a police officer after all. The two drove out to the wilderness, and when Mikhail parked the car, Svetlana began dreading what was about to happen.
"You will get out of the car now. You will not run. You will not kick. And you will not scream."
"What?"
"If you scream, I will hurt you."
Svetlana began pleading for the man to stop. He advanced towards her small body and towered over her. Then, the next thing she knew, he began bashing her head into a nearby tree for what seemed to go on for an eternity. The two fell to the ground. Struggling beneath the man's body, she managed to wrestle out of his grasp and run towards his car. She hoped to find the car unlocked with the keys in the ignition, but to no avail. Turning to look back at her attacker, she seen Mikhail struggling to get off the ground. Without a second thought, Svetlana bolted towards the road to find help. She came across an elderly man walking his dog and tried to stop him. The man began pushing her away. She pleaded with the man to help her, but he refused to get involved. Standing there in shock and confusion, Svetlana knew she had to hide. He'd be coming after her. Crawling into a nearby shrub, she waited. And then, finally, headlights beamed down the road. The rush of freedom filled her body. Running onto the road, she waved the vehicle down. As she approached the driver's door, the man came into the view.
I wasn't done with you yet.
He raped her and left her alone to die. The next day, on January 27th, a body was rolled into the morgue. The tow tag read, Svetlana M. Her body shot up, and in panic, she looked around the hospital room. She had no idea where she was or if she was even alive. The next thing she knew, she passed out again. When she awoke much later, she was no longer in the morgue, but in a warm bed. The doctors informed her that she almost died to her injuries. The man who attacked her had beaten her so hard that she suffered brain damage. One side of her body was left paralyzed, and Svetlana had lost the ability to walk and even speak. Her limbs had even suffered frostbite from being left outside naked to die in a ditch. Months later, Svetlana was discharged from the hospital. Her hair had turned completely gray. She had also contracted syphilis from her attacker and had to take medication to treat it. Svetlana explained how she was a virgin before Mikhail attacked her, so she knew she had contracted it from him. In a 2018 Russian interview, Svetlana described the attack, explaining, quote, I felt safe to go with this policeman. I was cold from head to my toes, so I accepted. I wasn't able to walk or talk, and I had to learn everything again from the beginning. It took 2 or 3 months. I had a stutter, and I still do. When Svetlana reported the incident to the police, she informed them that it was one of their own. She was brought into a room where the police placed all the officer photographs on the table. Svetlana was able to point out Mikhail Popkov. The police were suspicious of her claims, since Mikhail was one of their most respected officers on the force. When they questioned Mikhail, he denied everything. Mikhail's wife, Elena, who was also a member of the police force, told the investigators that Mikhail was with her at home that night in question. With that, the police closed the case, and Mikhail was a free man. In October of 1998, Mikhail convinced 20-year-old Tatiana Martinova and 19-year-old Yulia Kaprakova to get into the car with him when they were returning home from a concert. Like all of his other victims, he drove them to the forest and beat them to death and then raped their bodies. In July 1999, an 18-year-old girl named Evgenia Prosova was leaving a restaurant where she had just had dinner with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend wanted her to go back to his place, but she refused, and he told her to find her own way home. As she was walking home, she was stopped by a 35-year-old Mikhail Popkov, who was dressed in normal street clothes. He offered her a ride home. The man introduced himself as a police officer and flashed his badge. Like Svetlana, Mikhail had driven past Evgenia's house. Instead of stopping, he accelerated past and started driving out of town towards the wilderness. The girl began screaming at the top of her lungs. Mikhail then hit her hard over the head and she lost consciousness. Once at the location, away from the public, Mikhail dragged her body out of the car and hit her one more time. The poor girl was hazy and vividly remembered his face saying, quote, looking like a beast. Fearing for her life, she knew that if she did not fight or try to run, he was going to murder her. Strategically kicking off her high heels, she managed to push him off of her and started running. Unfortunately, he caught her quickly. He smashed her over the head and she fell unconscious. Luckily for her, the next morning, a group of people were out foraging for mushrooms and came across her dying body. They immediately rushed her to the hospital. Evgenia explained in an interview that her mother told her that the Good Samaritans had found her, and she was completely naked. She had been raped and strangled to the point of death, yet miraculously survived. She still has the scar on her neck to this day that will forever remind her of the evil that is Mikhail Popkov. Mikhail had quit the police force and instead began working in private security. In 2012, the investigators began piecing together all of the murders around Angarsk. All of the women were brought to a remote location in the Serbian desert and were left uncovered. Most of the crime scenes had one critical piece of evidence in common: tire impressions left in the ground that were the same as the police vehicles used in the force. The officers then asked a total of 3,500 retired police officers for a sample of their DNA. They also asked retired officer Mikhail Popkov to come in for an interview, and his DNA was taken. It was an exact match. Police arrested Mikhail Popkov on June 23, 2012. The investigators had suspected him of murdering a total of 29 women between the ages of 19 and 40. Mikhail confessed to killing 24 women, providing his testimonies in stages. He described the circumstances as voluntary and even savoring it. He explained that the reason he stopped was that he contracted syphilis, which rendered him impotent. Mikhail led the police to multiple grave sites, which got exhumed by excavators to find the bodies that had been there for over 20 years. With his cooperation, Mikhail identified 22 women in 2015. He also confessed to the two attempted murders of Anjenya and Svetlana. Before Mikhail could stand trial, he was required to be psychologically evaluated. He was diagnosed as completely sane and was aware of his actions. When survivor Svetlana went to the court proceedings, she immediately recognized him. He was in handcuffs, and she said that she had lost the ability to walk the second she looked upon him. Mikhail said that he was surprised to even see someone survived. Svetlana was shocked to hear the number of victims during the case and was disgusted by his lack of remorse or emotion the entire time. He had ruined her life and destroyed many others. She said, quote, "He does not deserve to live. If not for him, I would have a normal life, had a family, given birth to great kids. But for me, I live my life only with medicines. He doesn't repent. He is a monster." The other survivor, Evgenia Protasova, had tried to forget the horrific events of 1999. She is now married with a son and daughter, and for 13 years she hid the events that happened to her. She did not tell her husband until over a decade later. Evgenia said, quote, "When I saw Popkov's photograph online in 2012, I instantly recognized him, even though the first image I saw had blurred eyes. I decided not to go to the police. I thought it was so long ago and no one would listen to me. And how could I prove it was him? But the investigators found me because of my attack and invited me for a chat." When Evgenia was brought in to confront Mikhail, she confirmed that this was the man who attacked her many years ago. The relief of being able to finally tell her story took a heavy weight off of her shoulders. She said that she had been living with this horror, and each time she told her story, she felt better. In the courtroom, she seen her attacker. He was skinny and his face was gaunt. Evgenia said, quote, "I don't want to know that this beast will live. He should be executed and shot dead." Okay, so Mikhail's wife Elena and daughter Ekaterina, they have struggled to believe that Mikhail committed these horrific crimes. His daughter now is a school teacher, and she said, quote, "Watch how a butcher works. He is covered in blood from head to toe. Did women lay down meekly to themselves? I bet they would leave marks, bites, or scratches. You cannot hide this. But my father did not have any suspicious marks on his body or face." Mikhail's family believed that he was the perfect husband and father who was not even capable of committing such atrocities. Now, in a 2015 interview with Channel One, his wife and daughter expressed that Mikhail was innocent. And at the time, his daughter, Ekaterina, was 27 years old, and she said, quote, "I do not believe any of this. I always felt myself as daddy's girl. For 25 years, we were together, hand in hand. We walked together, rode bikes, went to the shops, and he met me from school. We both collect model cars, so we have the same hobby. I wanted to be a criminologist, so I read a book with tips on how investigators catch serial killers, and there were also basic classifications about murderers. Daddy doesn't fit any of these classifications. He doesn't look like some maniac," unquote. Okay, I'm going to try to not sound like a condescending asshole, which means I'm probably going to sound like a condescending asshole here. This is my opinion, that This is a prime example of book smarts versus street smarts. If a person does not apply what they've learned in theoretical education to practical real-life experiences, then they will be shocked all the time and constantly be in disbelief. Just because you know the alphabet does not mean that you know how to spell every word in the English language. So by taking that, to say he doesn't look like some maniac because a book expresses that serial killers all look like maniacs is unbelievably naive, and it's biased since she is the daughter. It's the Ted Bundy effect. Oh, I hate Ted Bundy. Ugh, I hate Ted Bundy. I'm sorry. He is my trigger. You mentioned Ted Bundy. I digress. Moving on. Mikhail is an intelligent, organized serial killer that has the intellectual capacity to live a double life. And this is why I love doing this podcast. I love going through all the way back to the childhood of these psychopaths and develop the understanding of why they snapped. Then you see the common checkpoints. So he went undetected for 2 decades. And when he finally was captured, he admitted that he lived a double life. Mikhail said, quote, "In my other life, I committed murders, which I carefully concealed from everyone, realizing that this was a criminal offense." He was fully aware of what he was doing, and he hid it from his entire family. And his family still thinks that he may have been coerced into saying that. No. No. So let's rewind to when Mikhail was planning to join the police force. He had to take a police academy psychological evaluations test, and the doctors administrating the test, they did take concern with Mikhail's aggressive outlook on life and his power-hungry attitude towards being an officer. However, he did pass the psychological exam, and obviously he became a police officer. So there are always signs. It's just who sees them and who brings attention to them. It's fascinating. In January 2015, 50-year-old Mikhail Viktorovich Popkov was charged and sentenced to life in prison. When Mikhail Popkov was sentenced, he showed no emotion. He was to spend the rest of his days locked up in Russia's toughest prison. To everyone's shock, when it was revealed that Mikhail was going to be stripped of his police rank and his pension, he was furious. Mikhail expected that because he cooperated with the entire investigation, that he would have been able to retain aspects of his life. 2 years after being convicted, Mikhail Popkov confessed to 59 more murders. Due to the lack of evidence, he was only convicted of 56 more killings. He was then given a second life sentence. Then, in July of 2020, Mikhail confessed to 2 more murders, which marks Mikhail Popkov's total killings to 83, all being triggered by the suspicion that his wife was having an affair. While Mikhail is in prison, it was confirmed in 2017 that a man named Alex Mulligan was a co-worker of Elena, and he admitted to having that affair with Popkov's wife back in the day. The 2 condoms that Mikhail did find all those years ago were indeed his. Alex said, quote, "I do not like to talk about this. He did not catch us red-handed, but he learnt about it." Lead investigator of the case, Lieutenant Colonel Evgeny Karvechky, said, quote, "I am more than sure that Popkov committed 100 plus crimes, if not closer to 200. It was impossible for him to stop halfway." Mikhail Popkov admitted that killing women made him feel satisfaction. He said, quote, "I felt satisfied when I felt their pain as they were stabbed." That is the true story of Mikhail Popkov, the werewolf of Angarsk. And he was a cocky piece of work, that one. In 2017, his daughter Ekaterina found it hard to accept that her father killed all those women. But when she was 30 years old in 2017, she became pregnant and feared that her unborn son would inherit the maniacal inclinations of his grandfather. And this poor daughter is in this limbo of denial and accepting that her father killed over 80 women, So he is considered far more dangerous than Andre Chikatilo, the Red Ripper, which is interesting because Andre Chikatilo is a wow episode, just due to the fact that Andre explained everything that he did down to every detail, where Mikhail was more general with his descriptions. So yes, I will do a wow episode on Andre Chikatilo, because he is a monster and he is weird and he is creepy, and I can just dive into that dark psychology for you guys. It'll be really fun. Now, the two guest cameos that joined me on this week's episode are Christopher, aka Captain Cook, the host of the Spicy Memories podcast, and Raven, the beautiful host of the Rogue Darkness podcast. So thank you both for your lovely vocal chops. I appreciate every second I got to listen to it and edit them together. Fun fact, they never actually recorded together. What I did was I asked them, like, hey, do you guys want to act out this script for me? And then I sent them the exact same papers, the exact same documents, and then they recorded them. They sent it back to me, and I edited them together, and it was magic, darlings. So thank you, and I love working with other podcasters and or just listeners to incorporate dramatizations into my episodes, since my style doesn't really allow me to have guests, and this way I can. So thank you. Thank you for expressing how you wanted to be a part of Lullaby. And I am working on getting more of you involved. So thank you so much for expressing the want and the need to be on Lullaby the Fear podcast.
There'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now. And then they'll come for you.
On the never-ending quest to find a truly scary movie, I am recommending one that will remind you of Squid Games, but it was created years before. And I'm going to give you two options, since there are two versions of the film. The film is the 2014 horror flick, 13 Sins. You can also choose to watch the 2006 original Japanese version of the film, which is titled 13 Game of Death. Now, both have the same concept, just different cast and slightly different ideas involved. Both are great, and I recommend both. The plot encompasses a man who is in debt, and he is told that he is on this hidden game show and can win millions of dollars if he completes 13 tasks. And they are gruesome, and they're filmed. So some of them are in public places, and they just leave you, the viewer, questioning what you or any person could do for money. And trigger warning, I think there is an animal death in one of the films. I haven't watched them in a long time, and I randomly remembered it while I was doing Mikhail Popkov. So I might actually watch them this weekend. That's what I'm going to do. That's my plan. You watch them, I watch them. Next week, we'll circle back. Sounds good? Okay. The YouTube horror short this week is called Ignore It, and it is written and directed by Sam Evanson. And as you know, I never tell the plot of the horror shorts because I want you to have no idea what you are about to watch in a very short time frame. So I try to scare you, now you try to scare me. Send me your horror movie recommendations. I haven't asked in a while because I finally caught up, because you guys have sent me so many, and thank you for them. I love it. Check out the 2014 film 13 Sins and the 2016 13 Game of Death, as well as the YouTube horror short Ignore It. Please take time to rate and review Lullaby on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon Music, and Audible, because it really helps support the podcast for free. And we love the word free. Follow on Twitter, YouTube, Slasher, and Instagram at Lullaby the Fear Podcast. Thank you for listening to this week's Lullaby. Sweet dreams. Lights out.